From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Toeksek Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, a chat with Sharon Price of Mud Child Ceramics about her work and the upcoming First Friday event at Kindred Post. The Juno Arts and Humanities Council will catch us up on all the other First Friday goodness and other art happenings around Juno in July. And the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association is here with a preview of their upcoming Garden Tour 2024, taking place on Saturday, July 13th. Those conversations, plus Tongass Voices, Garden Talk, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And if you're looking for info on holiday happenings, hit up ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon to hear a podcast stream of last Friday's show where we talk about events happening tonight and over the holiday. Gunath Cheesh.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. The word this week is That means king salmon. And here's a sentence.
They sleed ukokch.
The king salmon swim to Teslin when August is first arriving. Let's hear it again. King salmon. Gunath Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Takhu Society.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You just heard the Tlingit Word of the Week, a new weekly feature from KTOO. Each week, we'll feature a Tlingit word voiced by master speakers. Tlingit has been spoken throughout present-day Southeast Alaska and parts of Canada for over 10,000 years. And again, Gunath Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for sharing the recorded audio for this series. And in community news, due to popular demand, Theatre Alaska has added an additional show next week of Pride and Prejudice at McPheeters Hall. Find out all the performance locations and more at theatrealaska.org. That's theatre with an E-R. And the Little Mermaid Beauty Salon in Douglas closed for good last weekend. It's been a staple for people on and off the island to get their hair cut, curled, or colored since it opened in 1963. KTO's Clarice Larson was there for the salon's last appointment and has this story.
Jo Dahl has been getting her hair done at the Little Mermaid since 1985. For the past 14 years, that's meant weekly visits. But on Saturday, she was there for the last time.
Well, I always got really good service, and she knew how to handle my curly hair, which is not so curly anymore.
Surrounded by mermaid decor, including figurines and posters, Dahl sits in her chair wearing a black cape with slightly damp hair. Jo Paddock-Betts grabs a few strands of it at a time to put them into rollers. Paddock Betts has owned the salon for 41 years, taking over from the previous owner in 1983. Over the years, the location has bounced around a few times, but it's never strayed from Douglas. Now, it's attached to an auto body shop across the street from the Methodist Church.
You know, it's a small enough community. There's plenty of parking. And back in the days when I first had the salon, the auto body shop here was owned by a guy named Woodsy. And we used to advertise together. We would do Woodsy's Perm and Lube. People would get their oil changed while they were getting a perm.
The salon has been a staple for people across Juno. With only a handful of places to get your hair cut by a professional, Paddock Betts says she's had clients come from way out the road just for a trim. But after 4 decades, she's ready for something new. She's been trying to retire for a few years now and was hoping to hand over the business to someone else. But nobody was biting, and she decided it was time to close its doors.
I had to come to the point where it was okay for me to say, it's okay. Douglas will be here when you're gone. And, you know, when an institution like this has been here since 1963, that's 61 years of a business that has thrived.
Haddock Betts says it's a bittersweet moment. She's grown quite a number of friendships with her clients, like Dahl. She says that's what she'll miss the most, and she's grateful for everyone who supported her.
It's been a challenge to let go of the, not only the love for Douglas and Juneau for all the people who come here, but for the community. You know, it's a loss. It's a huge loss, but I've loved every minute of it.
Haddock Betts and her husband plan to stay on Douglas, but spend their retirement traveling. Now that the business is closing, Dahl says she's not sure where she's going to go to get her hair done instead. But she does have some ideas.
Where am I going to go to get my hair done? Her kitchen. She's going to do my hair for me.
In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
You're listening to Community Supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Independence Day holiday is upon us, but First Friday must go on, as this Friday, July 5th, Sharon Price from Mud Child Ceramics will be at Kindred Post. To see some of the work, visit Instagram at mudchild_ceramics or the website mudchild-ceramics.com. And here to catch us up on all things ceramics is Sharon Price. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasi'iti, how's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. I know we've had you on the show before, and that's a wonderful thing. I remember hearing a little bit about the work, but I want to do that and find out a little bit more about what's been happening with you. I know that you have a new shop online that you've been able to create. Tell us a little bit about your shop.
Yeah, I got my website up and running. And this past May, I did my first online store opening. So I was able to sell my pieces online and ship them out. And that was pretty exciting. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to building that audience even bigger and bigger as time goes on.
All right. Congratulations on that. That's a big step, right?
It is. Yeah, it was really intimidating because I'm not really that tech savvy when it comes to sort of all that admin behind the scenes stuff. I'm more about getting into the clay. So I'm very fortunate to have a lot of good friends and family that are more in tune to that area. And so I was able to get a lot of help with sort of what to do in the process.
Who's your go-to tech person?
That'll be my friend, Alan.
Shout out, Alan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So I know you work with clay, and I know your background, you sort of discovered Play-Doh, right? Isn't that where it started with you as a kid, kind of? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Play-Doh was definitely sort of one of my favorite things to play with as a kid. I was always a very tactile kid. I was always playing in my sandbox and playing outside in the mud. And yeah, it's just sort of from there, it just always kind of grew. I was always, you know, sort of influenced by different arts and different mediums. You know, my parents were very encouraging and open to it. And so like my mom let me paint on my walls in my bedroom as a kid. And so I like little mini murals everywhere, stuff like that. So it was always something that I really enjoyed, is just working with my hands. And it wasn't until college when I kind of sort of defining it a little bit more and really picked up more towards pottery than all the other art forms.
Were you going to school specifically for art?
I was actually a theater arts major. So I did technical theater. So I graduated with a BA at Cal State Long Beach in California, and concentrated on costume and makeup work.
Okay.
And so still something that is textile and stuff like that.
Right. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you started to get serious about about sort of the pottery part of it in college?
Yeah, I did it as a hobby or sort of just as a, you know, fun side gig. I didn't really sell any of my work until I moved up here to Juneau.
Okay.
Before that, it was more of just pieces I kept for myself or just gave away to as gifts to friends and family. Yeah, when I came up to Juneau and sort of saw how much of an art community it is with First Friday events and Fresh Air Markets, the Jack and stuff like that, I was really kind of got encouraged to try selling my stuff for the first time. And so I signed up for one of the Fresh Air Markets. I think it was in 2021. And that was my first time ever selling my stuff in person. And my first sale, like, I did cry a little bit.
That's great.
I was surprised, but yeah.
Well, it's so nice to know that, you know, a community like that, with the community support and all the ways that you can do it, because I know, especially like in California and bigger cities and stuff, it's a little intimidating to figure out like, where do I go? How do I start? What do I do? Like, you know, there's so many more people probably trying to do the same thing maybe.
And, yeah.
You know, but to, and that's one of the things I love about Juneau is just A, that we have fantastic artists. It doesn't matter the size of the city. The artists here are fantastic. And then the support network that is there for artists. And so that's a cool story that you were inspired by that and sort of the bravery and courage that it took to do that first, you know, sale. And now you've got a website and it's growing and growing, and that's great. And I think are you still sort of working out of your garage? Is that kind of where you keep your stuff?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm working in one half of a 2-car garage. Okay. We are in the process of moving. So we're going to be moving to a new house still here in Juneau.
Yeah.
But that house came with a 1,000-square-foot boat garage. So I'm going to have a lot more space to spread out and maybe invest in a larger kiln, which I'm excited about, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from here on out, I've been like 2024 has been a ton of growth for me with my website and my first online sales. So, and then now with, you know, the bigger shop, I'm very excited to see what's going to happen.
That's cool. I'm curious when you first got into it, when you were starting. You know, because obviously with pottery, you know, like with drawing or something, you just buy some pencils and some paper, right? I mean, there's a lot to it, obviously. But like with pottery, you have to have the clay, you have to have the wheel, you have to have something to fire it in.
Yeah.
So is there a prohibitive cost at the beginning to sort of get that? Or did you find community members down where you were living to sort of help you with that stuff?
How most people get into pottery usually is with pottery studios, sort of local communities that will have the whole facility and set up there, and you just pay a membership. Because I know the Pottery Jungle here in town has recently started doing pottery lessons. And that's basically how I got started. When I was down in California outside of college, I paid a membership to, there was one in North Hollywood and one in Pasadena, where I would go and then take classes and be able to use the clay and the glaze and the kilns that they had there.
I see.
So sort of just like an open art studio, essentially. Right. And then from there, you know, it's really up to your own personal, you know, feeling towards it if you want to invest in it, because it is a very expensive art style to get into. There is a lot of investment.
I would imagine a kiln's got to be kind of expensive.
Yeah, I have the smallest one that can go up to like a mid-fire range, and that was, gosh, I think probably close to $2,000.
Oh,
and
wow.
From there, I've seen kilns that can go into tens of thousands. So it really just depends on how big and how if they're electric or gas and stuff like that.
I see. And obviously the size of the kiln will dictate how big of the work you can do. And I know I gave out the website, mudchild-ceramics.com, where you can follow Sharon at Instagram at mudchild_ceramics, where you show pictures of the things that you do. So let's talk a little bit about that, like in terms of your inspiration. Tell me about where does the inspiration come for the work?
A lot of my work, especially the stuff I have that's going to be on sale at Kindred Post, has been very sort of botanical and nature inspired. I've done some plates that were pressed with devil's club leaves. They're sort of a local medicinal plant that grows everywhere here in Southeast Alaska. And the leaves have like this fantastic texture on the back of them. They're filled with thorns, but I sort of just, you know, get scissors and clip those off. But they made a really cool impression. So I made some plates with those. I did fireweed and forget-me-not flower mugs. Those I sculpted. Usually I've been doing a little bit more painting, but this time around I was experimenting a little bit more with sculpting through sort of like 3D flowers, and they turned out really cool. So I'm excited to see how people take to those.
Say that one more time. So you're sculpting more, you're with the clay, you're sculpting more of the flowers than what were you doing before?
Before I would either probably just like paint on them or carve. Okay. So it'd be like recess versus
more of a 3D.
A relief. Yeah.
Oh, and how are you finding that? Is it more challenging?
In a way, it can be a little bit more challenging. I just wanted a more sort of like natural effect. It's sort of fun sort of having like a 3D image sort of on a mug. It's, you know, something that encapsulates, you know, sort of like all the senses, you know, because you can feel it and you can see it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine, like, I'm sure this happens. But like the heartbreak of, do you ever have things that you design something and you spin it on the wheel and you get it ready to go in the kiln? You know it's going to be fantastic. And then it all falls apart in the kiln or something?
Oh, yeah. That's something when someone gets into pottery, you learn early on is, I had a pottery teacher say, never fall in love with a piece until it's out of the glaze fire. Mm. Because, yeah, there's so many steps of the process just to get to the final product. And so many little things can go wrong in between any of those steps where, you know, your piece wasn't thrown right. You know, you didn't, you know, compress the bottom well enough and it dried too fast and you got a crack on the bottom, or you didn't forgot to dust off your piece. And so the glaze now started just to run off of it instead of sticking to the clay, or there was a, you know, misfire, or I've had things explode in the kiln before.
Oh,
luckily
no.
Only once, but it, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
You can do this for years and there'll still be goofs.
Yeah. It's great. And how do you choose, like, I'm looking at your Instagram right now and I see, you know, the various different, obviously I think it looks like you're very nature inspired, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So a lot of green and sort of leafy kind of colors, but then I also see things like these, jars, I guess they're jars, pitchers maybe, that have kind of a teal and then sort of a I don't know, what is that, like a yellowish kind of color to them. So where do you find those colors at? What speaks to you about those colors, I guess I'm asking?
Yeah, when it comes to glaze, that's something that's always sort of a tricky part of pottery, because a lot of it is, you know, just down to the chemistry. Mm-hmm. I don't make any of my glazes. I buy all of them pre-made. So it really comes down to the application and layering, stuff like that. I usually tend to go towards like earth tones, but I like playing around with pops of bright color. I try to do a lot of my botanicals realistically, not so much sort of like an, you know, cartoon version. I like getting all those fine details to it.
And is it basically, I'm also seeing, I love this, you have these juicers here.
Yeah, citrus juicers.
Citrus juicers, which just look adorable. Mm. And I think you've mentioned this before, but so most of the things that you are making are functional in some way, right?
Yeah, I get a lot of joy out of making functional pottery. There, you know, there's a whole realm of sculptural pottery and, you know, but there's something about, you know, using a piece of artwork that you made that's just a little bit more satisfying. Or, you know, there's a bunch of mugs in my own cupboard that are made from other ceramic artists. And I love holding on to them because sometimes there will be little details to it, like the maker's mark, or you might see a thumbprint here and there, you know, not so much imperfections, but just shows that it's handmade. And it's those little details that I absolutely love. And it can show, you know, someone's skill and care that was put into it. It's not something that's just mass produced.
Yeah, I love that.
Or it's perfect. You don't, it doesn't need to be perfect. It's handmade.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, and I know we have that lovely new place in the Mendenhall Mall where you can go and it's already fired and stuff, but you can paint on the on the pottery and then they'll fire it for you. And I went there and I love it because I made a little, they had like a little spoon holder. And I have it on my stove and I see it all the time. And it's nice because I know that I made that.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm able to use it and it's just,
it brings you a little spark of joy when you see it.
Yeah. It's just, it's just, there's something about, making something yourself, you know, that is cool. But there's also something really cool about supporting an artist who is making things that you will then be using on the daily, let's say. And kind of making that happen. So I just think that's awesome. And then, so what happens to, the work once you're done with it? You sell most of it?
Yeah, I sell most of it. And when I'm prepping for a sale coming up, usually that's when I'll get into work mode and I'll start making more pieces so I can stock up, essentially.
Yeah.
And so for First Friday, I have a lot of stuff. So
so get on down to Kindred Post for sure. And you're going to be there on Friday from what time to what time?
It's from 4:30 to 7.
Okay, 4:30 to 7, and that's July 5th.
Yep.
And you're going to be there, and you will have all kinds of things available.
Yeah,
and
I'll have lots of mugs. I'll have teapots. I'll have some plates, spoon rests. I think I'll have a jewelry holder. Trying to think what else I have left. Mostly, it's mostly going to be mugs this time around, but I do have some other larger pieces. I've been taking some classes at UAS just to get access to their larger kiln and also just to practice throwing larger because I am sort of limited to how big my kiln is at home. And so I'm going to have a few pieces that I made at UAS for sale also.
Awesome. And if you're interested in pottery, you'll be available there to ask questions of and talk about the process and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'll be at Kindred Post the whole time. So sort of there to talk and interact. People have questions about the pieces or how things were made, you know, so I'm really looking forward to just talking about pottery with everyone there.
That's awesome. Sharon Price, Mud Child Ceramics, making functional pottery right here in Juneau. She has her new website set up and ready to be looked at and maybe order from. You can send some stuff off to people that you love, mudchild-ceramics.com, and or you can follow her on Instagram at mudchild_ceramics. Sharon, it's been a pleasure to catch up. In the theater, we say break a leg, but I guess you don't say that for pottery because you don't want to break anything.
So. Exactly. Yeah, don't slip up.
Don't slip up. There you go. I really appreciate you coming in. Gonna cheese.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Up next, more First Friday goodness with the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, along with updates on events happening in July. But first, this week's Tongass Voices, a series from KTOO sharing weekly perspectives from the homelands of the Akwan and beyond.
My name is Sukun. In English, I'm known as Dunedin Jackson, and I am a child of the Eagle Moiety. And my father's mother is Kokutan from inland Deshin, Teslin, and my mother's father is German. So we are at Wooshkindind at Lily Hope Weaver Studio, and I am currently the featured resident artist in the studio for the time being. And I have been honored with the opportunity to work on a button robe, which is a very rare opportunity since Lily doesn't specialize in our woolen button robe. So this is the emergence robe, and it was commissioned first by the Search Medical Organization 30 years ago by Lily's mother, from Lily's mother, Clarissa Rizal. So Search Organization uses this robe for patients who are transitioning from this world to the next. And so the families can request the use of this robe up to a week before they expect their family to pass. And it gets laid on their bed to aid with their transition. I am lucky enough to be here in the studio as Lily's apprentice and working on getting that completed. actually, this is my very first opportunity to work on a full-size button robe for Lily, and so I get to really do some true apprentice work. But I actually came to the weaving through Lily when she went online during the pandemic. I got laid off from my government job due to said pandemic, and I decided to re-indigenize my life, and I began learning Tlingit, our traditional language. And the language led me to the weaving, and I have been doing nothing else ever since. So the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and CCHITA, Tlingit and Haida Council, has partnered together to bring me to the traditional territories to offer some weaving workshops. Because 2 years ago, Lily decided I was going to teach, even though I was like, I'm not ready. She said, yes, you are. And she gave me the boot. And so this is now officially, I have been teaching workshops starting this last year. And so we're going to be completing my very first weaving workshop with Gold Belt. And we're weaving the side border of a child-sized Chilkat robe to be turned into a piece of regalia for a headdress. Oh, it has been just absolutely delightful. And it's been really quite a teaching experience or a learning experience doing the teaching, just identifying people's understanding, who has taught them before, where they're at, and how to meet them there and bring them all together forward collectively. It's been a wonderful reconnecting opportunity to be here in Tlingit Ani in the Occoquan territory.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakhaya haani kak gunish cheesh.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time now for another kind of revelry with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. All the good First Friday knowledge plus other events happening around during the month of July and beyond. Follow all the events, of course, at jahc.org. But in the studio now, joining me are Rochelle Bonet and this month's featured artist, Alana Madel. Gunath Cheesh, hi. AID, thank you so much for you both being here today. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
It's going well.
It's going good. We're ready. We're ready for First Friday.
We're ready.
We're getting there, right? You got a couple more days. We'll talk to you in just a minute, Alana. We usually do a little bit of an update on what's happening with First Friday and then other things that are going on around town. So let's start with that. What do we have for highlights for First Friday, Rochelle?
Okay, so we have a few things going on this month. We're actually pretty busy over at the Jack between Alana's exhibit and then across the street at Centennial Hall. We actually have two exhibits opening over there as well. We have a show by Bing Carrillo. It's a splash photography show. So very colorful, up close photographs of splashes. And he's going to be setting up a little station during First Friday to show that process.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah.
And then we also have some work by Karen Goldberg Bell, and her show is mixed media works that kind of embrace imperfection and explore different mediums and techniques. So through her art, she's hoping to shed light on the importance of mental health and its impact on our everyday lives.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, so that's going to be happening from 4 to 7 p.m. over at Centennial Hall. And then down in the downtown area, we have, I'll just hit a couple of things.
Yeah, there's so many. And yeah. Of course, you can always go to jahc.org, J-A-H-C.org. If you haven't been to that website before, it is the gathering place for a calendar and all events going on around in Juneau. And of course, there's also a First Friday page, which Rochelle keeps updated religiously.
Yes.
With all of these different events, because there's usually like 30 people or so. There's so many places.
Month to month, it kind of depends. Yeah. Anywhere from like 10 to 30.
Yeah.
Sometimes even more than that.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So yeah, just highlight a few for us.
Down at Hearthside Books, Trip Krause will be there reading and signing their poetry collections, The Duel and Titan. That's going to be happening from 4:30 to 7 p.m. And then down at the Pottery Jungle, they will be featuring Kelsey Corpola of Creative Tides, and she's a stained glass artist.
Oh, cool.
Which is going to be really cool to see. And that's going to be happening from 4 to 8 p.m. And I think you just had Sharon Price on.
We did
before.
Just have Sharon.
Okay.
Yeah. And I love the Pottery Jungle. It's a great new space. If you haven't been there, it's the former, what people might know, remember as the Canvas up there on Seward Street. And it's just a really cool space now. And it's awesome. I mean, it's always been a cool space, but now they're having shows on First Fridays, which is great.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of in the same area of town, Alaska Robotics will be featuring Alex Bookless, and they work in paint and ink. And then kind of just down the street at Devil's Club Brewing Company, we have Mikala Waters, who's a painter, and she'll be featuring some of her new works as well.
Wow.
There's even more than that, though. Like Austin said, go to our website.
Yeah, go to the website.
Get the full listing.
I just don't know how people continue to do this month after month after month. Not only like the artists who are trying to figure out where they're going to be on occasion or over the months, but then the institutions, you know, that are opening their spaces up, even if they're not normally an art house, like the robotics, you know, Alaska Robotics. It's a comic book shop with games. And then they have art. And then it's just kind of cool about that First Friday's become such a thing in Juneau. And of course, at the gallery at the Jack is Alana Madel. So hi, Alana. Nice to meet you.
Hi. Nice to meet you, too.
So tell us a little bit about your work.
So I am a multimedia artist, so I use all types of different mediums, but I do prefer to paint, and I use gouache, which is reminiscent of watercolor, but it's a much thicker pigment, and it's a lot of fun to work with. So at the show here, there's several original paintings as well as soft sculptures and multimedia pieces for the walls and all kinds of different stuff.
Gouache.
Yeah.
What? Tell me a little bit. That intrigued me. Tell me a little bit more about gouache and the difference between watercolor.
Well, gouache is spelled G-O-U-A-C-H-E.
Okay.
Which is very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at
A-C-H. Gouache. E. Oh, you got to put the E on the end, too.
They use all the vowels.
Every vowel. Almost every vowel. Oh, my gosh. Gouache. Okay.
Yeah. And whereas watercolor, you might turn into a liquid form, it comes in a liquid form. So it's already really thick, a lot of pigment in it. A little dab of it can be the equivalent of your watercolor.
I see. Is it made of a specific, thing that is making it gouache? It sounds
probably.
Like, yeah. Okay. Probably. It sounds like it's like a more, it sounds like it's a very specific. I like that it's already in form, right? I mean, it's already in its usage. Is it come in a tube?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I may have seen this before, but maybe not known that it was actually called that.
It's also, it's not used as frequently by people. So it's not maybe at Joann's for sale.
Right. Is it harder to get or do you have to order it online?
Yeah, you have to order it from art suppliers.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In bigger cities, you might go to the whatever those stores are called, Blix or Flix or whatever it's
Dick
called.
Blick.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, thank you.
There's gouache there.
There is gouache there for sure. Yeah. And so when did you start painting?
Since I could smush stuff around with my fingers. I've been a painter my whole life. I got my fine arts bachelor's degree from the University of British Columbia back in 2006. And I've been, I don't know, an artist in this community ever since, although I did become a parent about 10 years ago. So that shifted.
There's a little slowdown period for a couple years.
Just a bit.
Yeah. And so, wait, so where did you go to school again?
In Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So did you grow up here and then go to school?
Yes.
I see. So I love that story because I always love that people go get their training, do whatever that is, but then come back to the community and bring that here. And so how long were you on a little break when you had children and then you're back into it now? Or how did that work for you?
Yeah, I would say the first 3 years of their lives, it's very hard to create. So yes. There was, and there's two of them.
Well, you're creating children.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Creating humans.
Yeah, your creativity goes into that.
Yeah.
So I think with each child, it took about 3 years before I could set aside time to do something like this.
Yeah. And what is your, what kind of subjects do you prefer?
I really like animals and nature and anything kind of creepy cute I can get into.
Creepy cute. That's a style. I like that.
Come to the show. You'll see some creepy cute. And I lost track of the question.
No, I was just like, what you're into, what kind of subjects you do. Yeah.
So this show is called Breathe, and the subject matter is a reflection on the COVID-19 pandemic, my asthma, femininity, being a mom, things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you said there will be, you said multimedia, so but that painting is your main thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you're going to have some other mixed media pieces as well.
Yeah, I use clay, wire, lace, fabric, salt. Okay, you know,
nice.
Anything can be used.
Yeah. Well, I love that you're talking about for this particular show. It's called Breathe. It's going to be opening at the gallery at the Jack this Friday. I'm assuming there's a first Friday event that's attached to this from 4:30 to 7 or whatever it usually
from
is.
From 4 to 7.
4 to 7.
Yeah.
Okay. And Alana will be there during that time to answer questions, I would assume.
I will. And we will have live music by Mallory Story. And
oh, nice.
It's going to be really lovely.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. And I love that. So you're sort of the theme of this and sort of reminiscing on, not really reminiscing, but I guess exploring, like you said, femininity, the COVID pandemic, your asthma. Like, that's really interesting to see how that's all going to shape into creepy cute. I want to see that. I want to see how that works.
Come see the creepy cute asthma.
Yeah. that is so cool. And how do we follow you? Do you have like an Instagram or something we can give out?
Yes, I just recently launched my website, www.alanamedel.com. And I am on Instagram, Alana Medel.
I love that. Well, I think your show sounds fantastic. I'm sure people will come out and see that on Friday. But thank you so much for coming in here today and telling us all about it. It's very intriguing. And is there any last things you want to mention, Rochelle, before we have to go?
Just two really quick things. Right now, wearable art tickets are on sale to Jack members, and they go on sale to the general public July 14th. So at any point, you can buy tickets at that point. And then we have another Fresh Air Market coming up at the end of this month, Saturday, July 27th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Those are awesome. I know Sharon, who was just in here, mm-hmm. has been part of those. Alana, have you been part of the Fresh Air Markets yet?
Not yet.
I think there's somebody you could talk to right next to you.
Perfect. Thank you for that connection.
Yes. I love that. Yeah, we got the hookup here on Juno Afternoon. That's how it works. Well, thank you so much for coming in for yet another month of updates from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Lots going on this weekend. It is a holiday weekend, but First Friday is still happening. There's all kinds of things happening all over town. Make sure you go to jahc.org and you can find the list of everything happening on First Friday right there. Alana, Rochelle, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Up next, the Master Gardeners Garden Tour 2024 is coming up on July 13th. We'll have a preview next. But first, in this week's episode of Garden Talk, KTO's Chloe Plesnack talks with Ed Byarski about what is a master gardener and how one becomes a master gardener. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
I've heard the term master gardener used both in referring to you and to others within the community. I'm curious if you could explain to me exactly what a master gardener is and how someone can go about becoming one.
Sure. The Master Gardener program started in Oregon with the Cooperative Extension Service as a teaching tool, I guess, and also a community service tool so that here... the Alaska Cooperative Extension Service, offers classes every year or every other year, depending on demand. And so that's how people sign up for the classes. There's roughly 40 hours of classes and workshops involved. And there is a fee for that, but there, at least locally, some of the Master Gardener organizations actually offer scholarships for people taking the classes. There is supposed to be some experience of people who want to become official master gardeners, should have a couple of years of gardening experience beforehand. And then that gives them kind of a foundation or reason to ask more questions about what they're learning. And in return, you go through the class and there's usually a project of some sort, might be a research project or otherwise, to do. And folks are also then asked to volunteer back to their communities 40 hours of community service. And whether that is particularly in answering questions from other gardeners who don't know what kind of a pest are we looking at, or how do I deal with these weeds, or how do I improve my soil and other things to make their gardens grow better. So I've enjoyed helping learning, started the first class in Petersburg back in the 80s and finished it in the early 90s, actually took the test finally and became a master gardener. I've got the pin and had the t-shirt. It's worn out.
That's awesome. Well, that sounds like a really interesting process. Do you know off the top of your head who people can reach out to here in Juneau if they want to become involved?
Yes, the Alaska Cooperative Extension Service has an office downtown, and that's the way you can look that one up online to call. I just helped finish teaching a series of classes this winter and spring, and I know at least our local extension agent, Darren Snyder, usually offers that class every other year, and it is both in person and online and virtual. So folks around Southeast and others can participate in the classes. And then in the alternate years, he has more of a beginning gardener's class, a little definitely less formal. And I suppose that could lead, if folks are interested, can go from that one and then sign up for the next Master Gardener class to follow.
Awesome. Is there anything else you'd want to add about the topic of master gardening or people being interested in that?
Certainly helped educate me, has led me. I mean, it starts out with basic botany stuff, which I did in college. I've got a biology degree, but it has led into lots more, especially experimental stuff. I mean, every year is a new experiment between our weather being different from one year to the other. The plants, new varieties of plants, seeds are always available. And so I'm always trying new stuff and learning truly from other people. And if I'm go to somebody's house garden to visit and seeing them growing something I haven't or haven't thought of, or again, seeing, wow, you've got a new pest that I haven't seen before. So we need to identify this because things are coming in. Pests and diseases are coming in, unfortunately, with plants we import from down south. So it's really a great program to help local gardeners.
And for more Garden Talk, go to ktoo.org/gardentalk. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and the highlight of the summer gardening season is almost upon us. It's the Southeast Alaska Master Gardener 2024 Garden Tour happening Saturday, July 13th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's going to celebrate Juneau gardens and gardeners. And the theme this year is Yes, Gardeners. Yes, Gardens. No, Juneau Gardens. Yes, we can. There we go, Pat. I got the motto out.
Good.
Juneau Gardens. Yes, we can. And here with a preview are Pat Harris and Scott Lefevre, both Master Gardeners themselves. Thank you, Ed, for that episode of Garden Talk, also explaining to us what a master gardener is. Is there anything else that we need to know about becoming a master gardener? You guys have done it both, right? It's a training course that you go through.
It's an extensive training course. You have 12 to 14 weeks. It's put on by the Cooperative Extension Service every 2 years.
Okay.
So it's not every year, but so if they had one this year, so it'll be 2 years from now, they'll have the next course.
Oh, I got to wait.
You're going to have to wait.
Don't wait to put stuff in the ground, though.
Right, because you can get started. Because, Pat, you were telling me what Ed told you about. When you're truly a master gardener is when you know when, how.
You become a master gardener after you've killed 1,000 plants.
So you can start now before you even have the certification.
Right. Get a few plants out of the way first.
And so the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association is a group, a nonprofit group, I'm assuming, that is a collective of all the different master gardeners in Juneau.
It also includes other master gardeners in Southeast Alaska, too.
Okay. So it's not just for Juneau. So you can join from anywhere in Southeast.
Sure.
It's in the title, right? Southeast Alaska. Yeah. Got that. That makes sense.
The National Gardener or the Master Gardeners program is nationwide. There are master gardeners in every state and most communities in the United States, too.
Do they do a national conference or anything? Do people?
I have not heard about that, but next year we're having the state Master Gardener Conference here in Juneau.
I think you mentioned that last time you were here. I remember that. We're going to definitely talk about that for sure as the spring comes around. That's going to be next spring, right?
Next May, yes.
Next May, okay. Yeah, that's going to be really cool that will be centered here in Juneau. So we'll have gardeners from all over the state coming to Juneau.
Correct.
Oh, man, that's going to be really fun.
And some very interesting programs being put on educational-wise.
Yeah. What is it?
One of the keynote speakers is a worldwide press presenter on no-dig gardening.
Oh,
which
no
is basically
dig
not
gardening.
Disturbing the surface of the ground and using it as a planting method. So this man puts on presentations all over the world.
Wow, that's going to be fun. That'll be something to look forward to.
So you can disturb the surface to add amendments and stuff, but you don't want to dig down too deep.
Go too deep.
Because you wreck the structure of the soil. So that's the theory.
Okay. So that's awesome. That's next spring. But next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend is the famous Garden Tour. And this is the 2024 Ooh. Version. Juneau Gardens, Yes, We Can. And tell me a little bit about that, Pat.
Well, this year we're featuring 8 gardens out in the valley and out the road. And We have a very eclectic mix of wonderful gardens that I think people will find inspiring and interesting. We've got everything ranging from very small gardens to a big greenhouse to 4-acre vegetable gardens. So lots going on for people to tour and appreciate.
Do people submit their garden to be chosen, or are you all picking from the master gardeners that you have in your company and you go, hey, Scott, we love your garden. We want to put it in the tour.
Kind of both. This year kind we had both. Somebody volunteer in January. She was so excited to be on the tour.
Oh, nice.
And of course, we couldn't see your garden until April, but...
You're like, hold on, we'll stop by. We'll stop by in April. Yeah.
And even at that, gardens have matured so much since I first saw them in April that it's really a treat to see them now after seeing what they were in the very early spring.
Is there a committee of folks who are choosing the gardens? How does that work?
Basically, this year, it's myself. Scott helped go around, and I had another person, a couple other people.
Uh-huh. And are you looking for, I mean, you talked about there sort of being this diversity in the gardens. And is that what you're looking for in the tour? So you don't want to see the same thing at each place. But are there specific things that you were looking for?
Well, first off, we choose a particular area for that year's garden. This year, it's going to be in the valley and out the road. Last year, it was mostly in the downtown Juneau area. It's also have been focused in North Douglas and Douglas areas. So we basically tour around and try to look at all the gardens in that particular area and find some that have promising, interesting features or new ideas or things like that, and then approach those people and ask them if they would like to be on the tour.
I see. Okay. So they don't necessarily have to be in the Gardeners Association to be on the tour.
Absolutely not.
Okay. So if they do have a garden they want to be considered, they could just reach out to the Garden Association and see if they might be included in the next time around.
Or if a person happens to be touring around and sees an interesting garden or has a neighbor that has a particular interesting garden, they can go to the website. We have a specified site there for nominating gardens for the next tour.
Oh, okay. That's great. Do you know, do you just rotate the different locations, or does it depend on where the gardens are?
We pretty much rotate the garden areas. So.
And that's to keep the driving down to a minimum, I would assume, right?
And we are pretty much limited to 8 gardens. This is about the maximum amount we want to do in one tour, because most people take a half an hour to 45 minutes at a particular garden. So in order to do the tour in the allotted amount of time, 8 is about the max we can handle.
Ah, so. I see. So now how does it work? Does someone go on the tour and it's self-guided, or are people there talking about what's happening in those folks' gardens?
Well, the hosts of the garden are there, and we have a couple of docents, some master gardeners who are helping guide people around. Otherwise, people can choose go to the gardens any order they wish, and spend as much time as they want within the hours of the tour from 11 to 4.
Okay, so you're not like committed to going with a specific group of people to figure out to see all of the gardens. So when I sign up to do the tour, do I get a list of the addresses? Is that what happens?
You'll be able to find a list of the gardens on the website the night before the tour. So on July 12th, you'll be able to see the gardens. Until then, it's kind of a secret.
Don't say anything.
The only people
we just
know
that they're in the valley
are the hosts.
They're the only ones who know. Okay, and you.
And we have to know, because we have to write the brochure and put it on the website.
right. Okay, that's kind of cool. So that's kind of a cool reveal, right? The night before, you don't actually know where you're going to be going. We just know we're going to be in the valley.
Yeah.
And out the road a little ways.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of cool. That's really great. And it costs money. It is a $20 ticket, right? That you can get. Let me give out the website so people have it. It's SEAK. That stands for Southeast Alaska. SEAK-mastergardeners.org. And you can it's a $20 ticket, and you can purchase that online. Cash sales of tickets will also be available at one of the gardens, but you won't know which one that is until the night before July 12th.
Correct.
Yeah. So if I go to the website and I see the locations, but I haven't paid my $20 yet, I will know the one that I'm going to want to give my $20 to at when I go on the tour, right?
And you can still get a ticket online on the 13th even.
Oh, so, you can? Okay.
Yeah. So I don't want to discourage people from thinking, oh, it's the 13th. I have to pay cash. You don't have to. You can still use a credit card.
I'm sure there's kind of a cool thing, though, Scott, where it's like being able to go with a small group of people to all the gardens so you can share the knowledge about what's going on, right, in terms of like doing it on your own.
That happens quite often. People get together as a group and tour the gardens together and point out things to each other.
Yeah.
In fact,
also point out that when you've purchased a ticket, you'll get a wristband that shows that you have purchased a ticket. And these wristbands will be available from a docent at all the gardens. So
it
doesn't matter where you start, you can get your wristband there, even though if you want to purchase a ticket at the day of the event, they'll be available only at one site.
Okay. And on that day, would I have to start at that one then to get my ticket?
You would have to start at that one to get your ticket.
If I wanted to pay cash, right? As opposed to purchasing it online. That makes sense. Yeah.
I was going to add to Scott's comment about touring in groups. We really encourage that because we'd like people to carpool as much as possible. Some of the gardens have kind of limited parking or difficult, little bit tight parking. So please carpool with friends if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there any kind of meeting at the end of the day, or is it basically open from 11 to 4 is what it is?
Yeah, it's just open during those hours. And there's no formal closing ceremony. I'm not going to ring a bell or anything.
I'm assuming, though, you might make friends and you end up going to get coffee or something and talking more about your own. Because I'm sure as everybody's doing this, they're sort of figuring out what they're doing with their own garden. And I'm sure it's a great way to get inspired to see the things. Is there sometimes surprises, like in terms of how did you grow that? Like particular thing? Is that something that happens a lot? Like, how did you get that to grow in Alaska?
Right. I think that's one of the great things that happens on the tour. I mean, I'm thinking about one of the gardens, people are growing things that we thought we never could grow in Juneau, and it's...
And where's that location at, Pat?
I can't tell you.
I tried, Scott.
There are some very interesting gardens in the tour this year. We toured them all last weekend to see that everybody was ready and ready to go, and there are some interesting, surprising features at some of these gardens.
Oh, that's going to be so cool. Well, it's the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association Garden Tour 2024. Juneau Gardens, yes, we can. It's $20. They're on sale now. You can go to the website, seak-mastergardeners.org. And the tour is happening from 11 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, July 13th. It sounds like it's going to be a fantastic lineup of 8 special gardens that are sort of out the valley way. Scott, Pat, thank you so much for coming in today and telling us about it.
Thank you. I'm always excited to be here.
Yeah, and it's so
talk
fun.
About gardening, yeah.
And so it's a great time of year, and the weather's been so good, so I'm sure everything's been growing really well and enjoying all the sun as well as we have, the plants and the gardens and the things. So that's really cool. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gwyneth Cheese for being here today. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Be safe out there tonight. KTOO is on holiday this Thursday and Friday, so there will be no Juneau Afternoon. We'll be back next Wednesday. Have a great and long holiday weekend, everyone. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday right here on KTOO, Juneau 104.3, and KAUK, Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to the episode, subscribe to the podcast, offer suggestions or feedback, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheese.